now on afternoons. Drive. Make this time of year less taxing with impressive savings on select Mercedes-Benz models until June 30. Visit an authorised retailer today. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, if you've got a question for the motoring people, the expert Sam Purcell is with us here. 131873. Send me a text and I'll put it to Sam on your behalf. 0460 873 873. You might be after a new car. You might be wondering what bit of technology or kit the car you're thinking of has or doesn't have, or maybe you should get that one instead of this one, or whatever it is. 131873. Sam, great to talk with you.
G'day, Michael. How are you?
Mate, I'm well, thank you. I was speaking last week about this proposed driverless truck trial that's going to take place on the M1 motorway in Melbourne, on the Monash Freeway. Didn't happen. What happened?
No, it was shut down right at the 11th hour, apparently, because of some union activity. I think it was claimed to be a bit inappropriate or even dangerous. So I think it was going to be two trucks operating between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. on a couple of tolled roads on closed lanes. No, never actually happened.
So it didn't happen. Transurban, the big toll road operator, seems to be behind all of this. And my understanding is, you know, the vision long term, you should have a dedicated lane for these automatic trucks, and they'd use some sort of satellite technology. But they'd also have someone in the cabin should anything go wrong. Now, people say, well, hang on, if you've got someone in there, why don't you just make them drive it? I guess the theory is, well, they could be in there longer than the law currently allows if automation does part of the job. Is that right?
I believe so. There's a bit of a fatigue idea there, and there's the potential that it could be a little bit safer, especially if it's in a closed lane. You're not going to be dealing with, I think the most dangerous thing is the people on the road, cutting in front of you, all that sort of thing. So if they can reduce a bit of risk there, get a bit of fatigue out of it, maybe these trucks can go a little bit longer and drive further distances, making it a bit more efficient.
And providing their battery technology in the future allows them. I mean, there's always that concern, isn't there?
Yes. So I think batteries in big trucks is going to be a long way away. And I think, autonomous driving, generally speaking, is going to be a long way away from Australian roads as well. When you think about the condition of our roads in comparison to other places in the world, it'll get there one day, but it's going to be a long road.
Look, I mean, trials are one thing. I'm not against trials or pushing the boundaries of technology, but I remember driving down the A5 in Germany, and that's the one that links Frankfurt to Strasbourg in France. And on the, I think, on both sides of the road for quite an extensive number of kilometres are effectively electrification points that trams would use. And the idea was that electric trucks would, like trams, put up the receivers, put up the antenna, drive along and recharge the battery as they went for, I don't know, 10, 15 kilometres using these overhead cables. Now, the infrastructure's there. It came at billions and billions of euros of cost. The problem is no truck's got the capability to use it.
Often
we put carts before horses, don't we?
Yeah. And when you think about Australia, I mean, Europe is a pretty big place, but Australia, I would argue, some of these truckies are driving even further distances in really remote areas. So I think it's going to be a long time before they put overhead wires on the Bruce or across to Perth or anything like that. Hydrogen power might get there, but there's a lot of questions around infrastructure and supplying all that kind of fuel in that regard as well. So, the future, we're not sure exactly where it'll play, especially in that heavy-duty trucking area.
It's coming. What it has in store, only time will tell. John's got a question for you. G'day there, John.
G'day. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question on the Toyota Corolla Cross Hybrid. I'm thinking of buying one. You go online and they say, look, they're not very popular. They only sell 8,000 units a year. And then you read a bit further and somebody says, yeah, but that's only because Toyota can't import any more than 8,000 a year. Do you know where the truth is, whether they just can't import them or are they not that popular?
G'day, thanks for the question. The Corolla Cross is, it's a hybrid Toyota, which means it does have a fair amount of popularity with it. And Toyota has been struggling for the last few years with getting as many of these hybrids into Australia. So there have been waiting lists. They have been subsiding, though, over the last sort of 12 months or so. They've been getting better supply into the country, so waiting times have dropped. So I think there's a bit of a little bit of truth in the lack of supply, but that is getting better in the next sort of 6 to 12 months in particular. You'll be able to get into one of these cars a bit faster.
All right, John, there you go. Some good news there. Thank you for the call, 131873. On the text, someone says, do you have any info on a replacement for the Lexus RC? That's from Richard.
Lexus RC, no, not at the moment. That's a it's a great car, but it's definitely an old vehicle. Lexus is on the march to doing a lot more electrification of their vehicles. So I think it's by 2026 even. I can't remember the exact year, but even into the 2030s, they're looking to be a fully electric brand across the board. So if there's going to be a new RC, something like an LC as well, the larger sporty convertibles, they'll probably be an electric model.
Nice looking cars if you can buy them.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm reading this word for word, Sam, okay? So I'm not verbaling someone. They say here, looking to buy a new small SUV, what would be your suggestion? Kia, Stonic, Mazda 3 or MG, budget 30,000, mature women. Thank you.
I do like the idea of a Kia for a few reasons. They've got a 7-year unlimited kilometre warranty, which is a really, really good thing to have. Their driving experience of the Stonic can be a little bit lackluster, maybe in comparison to others with the powertrain, but you can get a full-size spare in these cars, which is a great thing to have. So I would probably lean towards the Kia, but give it a good test drive, because just to make sure you enjoy the driving experience before you put your money down.
And if the women were immature women, would your recommendation remain the same?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, definitely go for a convertible then,
I'll say. Heat it up. Sam Purcell with us talking motor vehicles from Drive, drive.com.au. Sam Allen's got a question for you. Alan, fire away.
Hey, Sam, how you going, guys?
Good, mate.
Okay, so my question is, I read a clip a few months ago about a Tesla car, and it said that salt air damages them, and especially salt in snow countries. Is that true or untrue?
Right. I haven't heard this one before, to be honest with you. I mean, you would argue that salt air would be not a good thing for most vehicles. When you look at the warranty of a car, quite often they come with a general, a warranty that covers everything. But there's often an anti-perforation warranty as well that deals with the quality of the paint, corrosion and that sort of thing. So off the top of my head, I'm not sure where the Tesla sits here, especially in comparison to other cars. But you would assume that it would be fit for purpose as well for Australia if they are selling it. So consumer law will be probably one of the controlling factors in this regard.
We think if you got them in California, they could probably do the east coast of Australia. But what concentrations of salt air might do to, I don't know, the battery, Sam? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, the batteries are generally speaking quite well sealed and that sort of thing. So I would guess if there would be an issue, it would be more with just like the chassis, the steel components of the car.
Oh, well, yeah, someone says Tesla have a thing called Cybertruck, and it's got a different exterior finish. Looks like or is bare metal or something. So maybe that's the issue.
That's an aluminium one. And it can just start to look a little bit weathered, similar to like a benchtop in your kitchen or something like that, I suppose.
Yeah.
So you need to sort of take good care of them, give them a really good polish all the time, or they just start to you could call it a patina, I guess, but it just can look a little bit secondhand as well, especially for a brand new car.
You don't want your brand new car looking like a gutter out of a sort of an ancient cathedral, you know. I don't think that's the idea.
In
20 seconds, literally, the MG4 EV, what are your thoughts?
The MG4 EV, that's a car that I'm actually sitting in right now. In terms of value for money for an electric car, it's very, very good. It outsells its competitors. There's a few others around that area, under $40,000. Good driving range, good driving experience. The interior maybe isn't as nice as some of the other competitors, but I think it's good enough. Definitely worth considering.
Sam, great to talk. We're out of time. Thank you. We'll catch up again very soon.
No worries. Thank you. Cheers.
Sam Purcell, the off-road editor at drive.com.au. Apologies for those we ran out of time.